Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Shota time. It's Shota time.
Yeah, it's Shota day, and five would be the most he's going to go.
Cautious approach. They're going to be smart and conservative with somebody who has been out as long as he's been out. Five innings.
Here's the 3-2. Swing and a miss, strike three. Shota striking out Wilson Contreras with some high heat. Swing and a miss, strike three. Shota strikes out Hampson. Here comes the 2-2 to Donovan. Swing and a miss, strike three.
And the Cubs leave St. Louis with a split.
Valencia working relatively quickly. He is ready again for the 2-2. And here it comes. Strike three called. Cubs win the ball game. Daniel Palencia strikes out the side. And now Wilson Contreras being restrained by some of his teammates.
I don't know what Wilson, you know, there are times where he just does these things and you don't know, have any understanding why. And we saw it in Chicago, and, you know, it's not like the Cubs are going to try to hit him and bring the tying run to the plate. That's for sure.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Hey, Chicago. What do you say? Cubs gonna win today.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Shody Managa back. Gosh, it's like he never left.
Good morning, Mully. Happy Friday. Wow, that was something else.
He was
good.
He was awful good.
Shody Managa, back after a seven-week absence.
Hard to believe.
Did exactly what the Cubs needed him to do. He was efficient. He was smart the way he mixed up his pitches. He was in command and control and all the things. It was so good.
He's always paying tribute to Chicago, and he gave you the Red Grange number of pitches.
77.
Pretty awesome.
77. Yeah, so good. It made you want to sing in the shower.
Zero runs.
Yes.
That's the big number. How about that? How about you lose two games to these guys, and then you decide, you know what? Let's just never let them score another run. That's one way of winning.
Well, the Cardinals, their frustration showed at the end of the game. We'll get to that. But going two games in a row.
Willie, man. He's just a madman.
Scoreless streak goes back to the second game of the series, and that is a long stretch. So the Cubs went from a pitching staff that had given up 54 runs in the six previous games to shutting down the Cardinals two games in a row and shutting them out with authority. That was fun to see. And it felt like 2 days ago was a long time ago.
Yes. Like a lot of things got healed.
And it felt like the Cubs left St. Louis with a series victory.
Yeah, even though it was a split.
It was because of the way that when you shut your opponent out, it gives you a little bit extra boost. And when you see Shota Managa on the mound for the first time in 7 weeks, it feels like a trade. You got a guy at the midway point, and he's back.
And Wilson Contreras was in fighting mode. He wanted to go at it. He seemed sufficiently frustrated that it made you feel like you did win the series.
He seemed sufficiently Wilson.
Oh, he was him.
This is on brand.
No question.
In character.
That's him. That's the guy.
On cue.
Yep.
He's done that with the Brewers this year. He's done that with the Reds this year. And he did that with the Cubs on Thursday afternoon. And he's done that with the Cubs when he was
wearing, a member of the Cubs.
You know,
yes,
Cubby Blue.
Yeah,
he's who he is.
He's got a little nut job in him.
But when he was here, when he was here, it was like, yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
you know, he need to watch that. But boy, you know what? He's going to bring that intensity. He's going to bring that edge. It's what made him. It's what fuels him.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Palencia, Coombs, right? I can't wait to talk to Coombs. He was disgusted. Like Wilson Contreras, he does things you don't can't explain, and he knows that.
Daniel Palencia is also he's a fellow Venezuelan, and he wanted you to know that not only did he not want to hit him, but that he admired him. He said he's been watching him since he was a kid.
That's funny. Well,
it was funny, and he didn't say it like not in a mean way. Just as information.
Matter of fact, I mean, because Daniel Palencia probably looked up to a guy like Wilson Contreras, sure, who was part of that 2016 Cubs team.
Absolutely.
And Daniel Palencia is 25 years old. So do the math. He was a teenager, 15 years old, probably 16 years old, when Wilson Contreras is a World Series champion.
And on to Houston for the Kyle Tucker revenge games.
Well, I think that's going to be a fun series because of a lot of the connections. You've got Kyle Tucker returning to Houston. You've got Ryan Pressly returning to Houston.
Oh, man.
And then the Astros will be all shook up because they see the Cubs coming in hot with Cade Horton on the mound tonight. That's going to be fun. I cannot wait from the little mini matchups within the matchup. I cannot wait to see Cade Horton against Cam Smith.
Oh, wow.
That will be fun.
He's not having a great year, though.
No, he's not. But he's in the lineup. He's in the majors. Neither is Matt Shaw.
He's in the majors.
Those are two young players that are going to get better. But then you got Paredes, who's having a pretty good year.
Oh, he's got a bone to pick.
You don't feel like he doesn't feel like an ex-Cub though.
Isak, he was one of the many, right?
One of the many third basemen last year. Yeah,
last 2 years.
Yeah, he's gotten a cameo. He had a cameo at third base. Mm. Did you see Jamer Candelario is on the loose? The Reds DFA'd him, signed a $45 million extension last year at this time. Now he's on the street. So you talk about the third base carousel. So, yeah, tonight will be a fun beginning of the series. The Cubs needed that bad.
If only there was a team out there that was starting a guy like Vinny Kemper at third base.
Why are you bringing the White Sox in here? We're talking about the Cubs coming in.
Whenever a player is cut, I bring in the White Sox because that's what they do, collect the cut, right?
I don't think they're going to get Jamer Candelario.
No, it's too much money.
Well, they are stuck. He would be taking somebody's place. The infield for the Sox is full of young players you'd like to get a look at, and that's going to continue in the second half. We're halfway through the season.
I know.
Actually, mathematically, 81 games. Both teams have played 81 games.
Yes.
And so
there's 162 in the season.
Yes, I did. That's
just for those doing quick math in their head.
Yeah. They said there would be no math, but I'm doing the math. Yes, I think that it's the Cubs are where we thought they'd be. Is that fair to say?
So are the White Sox.
Both teams kind of
where we thought they'd
fulfilling
be.
Preseason expectations. Cubs 48-33. And the White Sox, do you want to know the record or not? 26 and 55.
Okay.
They're 29 games below 500. The Cubs are 15 games above 500. That's a good place to be, playing 593 baseball.
Sox on pace for 52 wins, which would be spectacular given the 41 of a year ago.
Improved by 10 games, 9 games. You know, not good enough, but it's progress. It's progress.
Wouldn't that be 11 games? Not to do quick math on you, but
I'm estimating. I'm not thinking they're going to be exactly the way they are the second half. Okay. If they're 10 games improvement, that's where they'll probably be, unless they go on quite a run or they get into quite of a slump.
Yeah, well, they went into quite a slump last year. It's one of the reasons. So kept the man.
Shota was sharp, though. Shota
was great.
It was impressive that he took 7 weeks to recover and longer than you would expect a hamstring injury to heal. And yet he wasn't overwhelmed. He didn't look like he was working too fast. Craig Counton did a nice job of describing how he managed his emotions and the moment didn't get too fast for him. Not too big for him, but you know, too fast where you just forget sometimes and he's wanting to make a impression. And he was very, very good and methodical.
He was very controlled.
Mm-hmm.
He was Shota. He looked a lot like what you expect him to look like. He looked fully healthy.
How about, though, the second batter? Already he had to cover first base. And you're just sitting there, wait, don't run.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was a hot day, and he didn't seem to cramp up at all. I mean, it seemed like it was a pretty good outcome.
It was a good outing when he's not punching his thigh.
Exactly right.
When Shota's not punching his thigh, you know that we're in good shape.
Yeah, I agree. It was good.
Michael Bush homered. Needed that. First player named Bush to homer at Bush Stadium.
Is that true?
I believe they said that on the broadcast yesterday.
Oh, that's crazy.
I think the specific part that you guys would like is that with the same spelling, that's the key.
Oh.
So it can't be the B-U-S-H spelling.
Make sure you want to go get grab a beer.
Bush.
Yes.
And Carson Kelly had a couple of hits. That's good to see, right? He had such a great start to the season.
The best play, though, was the double steal. Oh, my gosh. Was that fun?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Produces chaos anytime. Yep. That's who you say PCA. I love that nickname you gave him. He's on third. And Wilson Contreras, that's what he was ticked off about. I don't think he was as ticked off about Palencia hitting him as he was looking so foolish.
He did look foolish.
He just didn't know what to do.
Yeah, he did look foolish.
I'm a first baseman.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Rough. Yeah, that was very rough.
And PCA, just in an instant.
It was so well thought through.
It was
the
great.
The second that happened,
and they needed
gone.
That run.
Yeah, they needed the run.
It was like it removed like, yes. Oh, what a relax! What a, it was a more relaxing lead.
It was an insurance run. That's always good to get an insurance run.
So on that play, Wilson Contreras looked kind of silly.
He did. He did.
I can't say it like Pat. I could try 100 times.
Nobody can.
Nobody can say it like Pat.
Pat's awesome.
Pat was on his game yesterday.
Yeah, he was. It was great. It was really a good day. It was a good day for the Cubs all the way around. No shadow of a doubt, you felt. good to have them back to where the lead was when they went in there, right?
Yeah.
That's important.
It's a little more reassuring.
Yeah.
This is a good series, though. Good test. Again, a team is 500 or better on the road. And the Cubs haven't, I believe, according to Bruce's calculations, they have not beaten a team in a series 500 or better since the end of April.
Yeah, that's
so get it done,
strange. How many have they played, though? You know, I mean, I'm just saying they've had plenty of chances, but
yeah,
I don't think they were doing pretty well.
Point being, you don't want to be the team that gets a reputation for only
as a front
feasting on the bottom of the division.
Yeah.
Or the bottom of the league. You don't want to be a bottom feeder.
No, you don't want to be a front runner. Yeah, I'm good as long as I'm in front.
I do want to compliment Dustin, though, and during the pregame show, he used the word to describe the Palencia and Contreras interaction, altercation. He used the word brouhaha.
Did he use brouhaha?
I love the word brouhaha. Do you remember using that?
Is that a Scrabble word?
It could be.
It could be, yeah.
If you have ha-ha on the board for Scrabble and you add B-R-O-U, it's like a
ahead
perfect addition. Mm. Yes, brouhaha. Oh,
it's not B-R-E-W?
No, it's not. That has nothing to do with beer. Has nothing to do with beer. It should, though. It'd be like if you have a bar fight, you think, like, yeah, it's a brouhaha. And people think you're fighting over beer spilled or something. But yeah, good use of the word. I was thinking fracas or melee.
Oh, melee is a little more violent than that was.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there was no violence.
Skirmish?
No.
The biggest punch thrown was probably Daniel Palencia punching his own chest. I mean, that was probably the biggest
punch.
Boy,
was he good, though.
He mowed down the side.
That last at bat.
Yep, two on. It felt like I went too far. I felt like the bases were loaded.
It's okay.
The tying run was at the plate.
That's okay.
But it felt like it was bigger. I was pacing the house.
And that's why it's so...
I couldn't sit and watch it. I was pacing the house.
But that's why it's so ridiculous to consider that Palencia would put Contreras on by hitting him.
Well, I think that Contreras was pacing Dustin's house, too. You know what I mean? Like, I really think it was the emotion of being as close as they were and then falling and losing and being shut out that led to his little...
outburst?
Donnybrook,
yes.
Just for you.
Thank you. I like that.
Oh, and Donnybrook.
Yeah, Donnybrook is a good one.
Kind of hear Donnybrook sometimes in the NHL.
Right? Yeah,
yes. Once in a while you hear probably more appropriate.
A Donnybrook.
And thank you for, it's been 14 minutes and we haven't even mentioned, it's draft day.
Yeah, it is draft day,
it's
and
draft
we're
going
to get into that. I'm glad draft day is over for the NBA. I think I was done with it. I think that was just a little too long. I'm not sure the second round deserves its own night.
The second round of the NBA draft is not like the second round of the NFL draft.
No, it's not.
There's not the appeal. Because you're not watching players that you think you're going to see on a regular basis.
But the very fact that you have to name the guys that were drafted in the second round and turned out to be great players. The very fact that you have to do that underscores that the majority, the vast majority, will not make the NBA.
When you have to name the exceptions to prove the rule.
Draymond Green,
yeah, okay. Jalen Brunson, and Jokic.
You've got those three names.
And in Chicago, you have to throw in, but don't forget Io.
Yeah.
And then, who else?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of guys that have been drafted.
Well,
late
it shows you how important it is or isn't.
It doesn't deserve its own day.
The Bulls did not even have a media gathering last night because it wasn't something that they anticipated being a big part of. It wasn't a big deal. And they're trying to manufacture some interest, and it does seem contrived from a broadcast standpoint. But I agree with you that there's little that happened yesterday that is significant or relevant, and all of it will be exaggerated and overstated.
There you go. That's fair. That's fair enough. But yes, we're moving on to the NHL, and that's a great night for Chicago because the Blackhawks have a couple of picks.
They do.
Always have a couple.
Yeah, I wish they didn't have it on a Friday night.
When would good day for you be?
I think they should challenge the NBA. I think they should say, you know what, we're not just going to give it to you. We're going to have our Donnybrook of our own between day two versus day one.
They'd lose that.
I think they wait till do it last week or next week.
Yeah, you could do it next week. You could do it Tuesday.
On a Thursday?
Do it on a Monday.
Yeah, do it Tuesday.
Do it the Monday after.
Yeah, whatever. I just don't think it's on a Friday. Doesn't make a lot of sense. I just don't think it's one of those things where...
See, now, I'm going to enjoy it and watch it because it's on a Friday.
I'm going to enjoy it.
I'm just saying, I like that we don't have to get up the next day. I mean, it gives great content when you break down a draft, but I'm just saying it doesn't allow you to kind of luxuriate a little bit with the picks.
It's another good word. Man, you're on today. Luxuriate is an excellent word. It's good use of it, too. I think the Hawks have two picks tonight in the first round.
Yes.
Third and 25th. The third one will get a lot of attention. They're unlikely to trade it. Frank Saravalli has been on our show, and he's been reporting that they tried to or they shopped it. Wasn't a ton of interest.
Yeah.
They're likely to keep it. Then they have the 25th overall pick. They added some depth. They've got a ton of draft picks.
Oh, they got a lot.
They got
a lot moving forward, too.
Yeah. So it's a big weekend for the Blackhawks.
And that third overall pick is usually a really good pick in any draft.
Mm-hmm.
To get the third player taken, that's pretty awesome.
And if the right guy drops to
you,
it could be immediate impact. They have 10 picks overall for the weekend's draft, and we'll see how they wheel and deal, because I think Kyle Davidson will be wheeling and dealing, at least moving around, up and down. He does like to do that, stay active. I would love to see them use some of those draft picks to package to get a veteran winger to help Connor Bedard.
I did read that your number one free agent target is likely to hit free agency.
Thank you. You saw that too.
Uh-huh. The general manager for the Maple Loafs said that he's going to hit the market.
You know what? That's an appropriate derogatory nickname for them right now.
Thank you for catching that.
They are really imploding. And they were a good team, and they are self-destructing. They're running Mitch Marner out of town.
That's weird.
It so is.
You know what, though? I'm just being honest about it. Why would he want to come here? They're not ready to win, and he's a win-now guy at this point in his career. He wants to be a part of the mix. I would imagine he will go someplace where he's much closer to a Stanley Cup than Chicago.
It's a fair question and a good point, but before you kill my buzz, let me point this out. He could sign a 2-year deal.
Get back in the market.
Overpay him for 2 years.
Yeah.
And get back into the market. And maybe if you're able to do that and you're Kyle Davidson, because he's young enough to still look at it that way, and maybe something about Chicago appeals to him. I don't know. I'm just trying to sell it because I love the idea.
Yeah, I know you love
the idea. He's one of the top 10 or 12 players in hockey.
Okay, but let's play that out a little bit. If you're Kyle Davidson and you sign him to a 2-year deal,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that mean you got to be a playoff winning franchise within 2 years?
You got to look like you're going somewhere. Absolutely true.
I think
you
have to be there.
Yeah, I think the Hawks...
That's not happening next
year.
If
you're signing Mitch Marner and you're aggressive in other ways and you're adding talent in 2 years, you might be in the playoffs or at least on the fringe. in 2 years, you might be.
Right. Just in time to lose the guy that's helping to get you there.
Or in time to appeal to him why it's worth staying.
If you're the Blackhawks, you want him to be here longer than 2 years.
No doubt about it. But you'll take two before you take none.
Okay.
I think he would.
I think he's going to go somewhere else and get paid a lot of money.
I don't disagree. But I'm not going to surrender the hope before the free agency even arrives. I'm not going to on June 27th. But you know what? You're right.
But when you're down to bargaining a 2-year deal, aren't you surrendering?
I'm not down to bargain. That's not me. That's not me. This is the scuttlebutt about Mitch Marner. He's still young enough to go out, and he might be seeking. People are looking at it, not just the Hawks. The way his career structured, that he might be looking at a 2-year deal, then reset the market when he's back on the free agent market.
What would be better, to sign him to that 2-year deal or let him go and win for a couple of years and then sign him to?
I think sign him now. Show him what you're capable of doing.
Because you think if he signs now, he'll sign later?
Yep. Yep.
Give him two years
with Bedard, dynamic duo. That would be fun. And he could see what this young talent could be. The Hawks are gonna be overmatched a lot of times. They're gonna be fast. New coaches, they're gonna play aggressive, and they could be fun to watch.
Feels like a pipe dream.
Could be. Let me dream. Don't kill my buzz, man. It's Friday morning.
No, you're on the pipe, and no one can kill your buzz.
Last night was a kerfuffle. 630 says I like that one too. Kerfuffle's a good kind of. When you say kerfuffle, though, it's like you're showing off because you want people to mention. Now, that's a good word. If you say brouhaha, it's just like that's good. That, you know,
it's just the description.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
But yeah, tonight I think we'll go through. We're gonna make our predictions, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, we're gonna.
One of us came really ready for the draft today.
Oh yeah. What we have one man here who is ready to actually to play. He's got the sweater already.
Brandon Fryer in the Hawks sweater. Nice choice. Even on a warm day, he's taking one for the team.
He's in there sweating right now.
Right now, I know.
I mean, the AC's on in here. I'm not stepping outside at
there
all.
There you go. Yeah.
That's good. You wouldn't be caught outside in a Hawks sweater.
You should
not at all.
Should drive over to one of the ponds and try to play. It's not frozen.
Flippers instead of skates, right?
Exactly. It could end badly. Be careful.
The first overall pick, Matthew Schaefer, will be going tonight to the Islanders. That's an unbelievable story.
Defenseman.
Yes. He is really the pick of this year's draft. He's clearly the consensus number one and has been through a lot. So he's one of those guys that if you haven't paid attention to his story, you might want to. So he picks the Islanders pick first,
yep.
Sharks second, and then the Hawks on the clock.
The great thing about drafts is that you get all the backstory that you actually, if you want to be entertained, you'll learn a lot about people and where they come from and what they – and it is unbelievable backstory if you do follow the league – that you will have at your fingertips for the rest of a guy's career. It's really good stuff. It's a good way of going about it.
Yeah, I thought the Hawks might be in the trade market and they maybe explored getting a winger for Bedard, but the guy that they were eyeing with Buffalo, J.J. Paterka, ends up going to Utah. So that's one guy scratched off the list.
All right, 312-644-6767 is the number. We're getting to the pick six. We're going to break down all the top stories. We'll talk them over. We'll do it next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How great was it to see Shota Imanaga returning from the hamstring injury like the exact same guy he was back on May 4th when he went down while covering first base? His five innings, one hit ball, took 77 pitches. He had 3 Ks. Did Shota exceed all of your expectations?
He was excellent, and it was great to see him back like the guy you know he is, right? He came back, and he was Shota. and he was excellent, and he did exactly what you anticipated he would do. He was maybe a little bit better than all of our expectations were, but he was excellent. And I think we all thought he would come back and be awful good. And they did wait a little longer than anticipated, and you got the sense that there was nothing that was out of the ordinary about his outing, that he was ready to go and he'll be ready in 5 days. It was probably the best of all possibilities. I mean, great, he could have thrown a no-hitter or something. He threw a one-hitter, and you were never tempted to leave him in. They got exactly what they wanted out of him. I just thought it felt like the most normal and perfect thing going. It was excellent.
Unless something crazy happens later on this afternoon when they wake up in Houston, I agree with you. I don't know that it could have worked out any better. And counsel also said that not only like they didn't push it, like he didn't push it. He was smart about the way he attacked the Cardinal hitters. And so again, to hold them to one hit through five, and I think 80 was probably the magic number. I think, you know, you guys were probably right there yesterday when we went through this and predicted it, and based on when they took him out, the way they took him out, I think 80, they didn't want to get past 80, and he didn't need to. And the bullpen did the rest. So outstanding Shota Imanaga, outstanding Cubs organization on handling this thing.
Total control. This was a masterpiece. And we talk all the time about needing more than two pitches. And he had four. The four-seam fastball. He had a splitter, change, a sweeper. He mixed and matched. And he didn't really – I don't think he exceeded 91 miles per hour. His velocity wasn't what you – think you need to succeed at the major league level, but when you can be as in control and command as he was, you don't need that. This is pitching. This isn't just throwing, and this is what he does best. One hit, and the only hit came in the first inning, I believe. It was an infield single right off of Dansby Swanson. Nearly made a great play, but you couldn't get it, and that was it. And Shota looked like a guy who had been here all along, not a guy who had missed 7 weeks. This is the top of the rotation starter we had been talking about the Cubs were seeking, and the one that they have missed. Imagine for a moment if you have Matthew Boyd, Shota Imanaga, and an ace to be named later, and those are your top three pitchers heading into any playoff series in October. That's an enticing possibility, and all things again seem possible when you saw Shota on the mound.
Boy, that's a good question.
That is the voice of Ron Coomer. He'll be answering the questions from Mullion Haw at 8 this morning when he's waking up down in Houston. What's your reaction to Wilson Contreras being in the middle of a skirmish with Daniel Palencia that resulted in both teams clearing the benches at the end of the game? And should the Cubs accept his apology?
Yeah, I think they accept the apology. They come back into Chicago next week, I believe. The rivalry is alive and well, and that is the best part about this. And Wilson Contreras is on brand, and he is ticked off, and that's okay. He plays that way against everybody. And if he felt compelled to apologize because it was his former team or whatever the case may be, that's okay. What he did was overreact. He has made a career out of overreacting. When he did it in a Cub uniform, it was he gave the Cubs an edge that they lacked. And we know from Ron Coomer's tone and description yesterday, he could get carried away. And he does do things that make you say, why? And yesterday was probably one of those examples for Cardinals fans. But the Cubs weren't trying to hit him. You don't bring the tying run to the plate in the ninth inning. He understands that probably when the cooler heads prevailed. But what you respect about Wilson Contreras is what you respected when he was a Cub. He brings it every day. And I really do like – I still like the guy. I know he's in a Cardinal uniform, but I was sorry to see him go, and I like to see him play.
Yeah, I can't blame Wilson for reacting the way he did because he brings the passion, fire, and desire every day, as you mentioned, David. And I thought this might knock some Cub fans to their seats. We recorded our Fly the W podcast last night, and I have to say that I think Palencia maybe took it just a little too far. And if I was on the other side of facing Daniel Palencia, the way I'm wired, I probably would have had the same reaction that Wilson Contreras had. Now, listen, you know, get on base, steal a base, get a hit, don't strike out, all those things that Wilson did yesterday to, you know, help your team win. Don't lose. Palencia could have focused his celebration, which I also appreciated. Focus it more towards your bench. A little bit too much of that celebration was focused towards the Cardinal bench. I think if they were playing the NFL, he would have been flagged for taunting. Okay? And I get why Wilson Contreras did what he did. This is good for baseball. It's good for one of, if not the best rivalries, not just in baseball, but all of sports, the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry. This is good. Had me pumped. I was not bored yesterday. Not one little bit.
Yeah, I think that Wilson Contreras is a very emotional, fiery personality. Emotional to the point of maybe out of control a little bit at times. And I think he got a little bit out of control. I just think that, you know, obviously they didn't want to put him on base. Obviously they don't want the game tied. It's kind of crazy to think that the guy was gunning for him. But that's just him in the moment. And then he apologized when he got a chance to think it through. But it's just his nature. That's all. And I thought Palencia was kind of, he was getting screamed at, and I thought he was kind of yelling back at him, like, "Hey, you know." And he was having fun with it because he won, and the guy was losing it and yelling at him, and you get tired of that. So I didn't have a problem with even Palencia the way he responded to it. I get it. It was upsetting the Cardinals, but you know, Wilson Contreras has to calm down a little bit in that situation. Let's just be honest about it. So yeah, you accept his apology. He was a good servant to the club when he was here, and you move on. And I think that it just sort of gives you a little. Yeah, no wonder they got rid of him. You know, guy's a complete nut job. So I think that they probably enjoyed seeing that happen. It also makes you feel like if things get bad in the next series, just throw it Wilson. He'll lose it, and then you can move ahead. And he just revealed a flaw a little bit too much for my liking.
I would love next Friday afternoon if that's what happened. A little chin music, if you will, for Wilson Contreras right off the bat. That would be a great way to start things at Wrigley.
I understand the question.
I guess Craig Counsell didn't like that idea. Well done, Brandon Fryer. What do you make of the Cubs shutting down the Cardinals in 22 straight innings after losing the first two games? How about the bullpen not allowing a single run in four-game series? Huh? Poor Michael Fulmer being DFA'd to make room for Shota.
Yeah, did you realize the bullpen hadn't allowed a run? I don't think I realized that. It just felt like they were scoring runs at will, frankly, earlier on in that series. And I did not realize that the bullpen had been good. So congratulations to them. Again, when you have a couple of outings that go awry, it can turn on you. But you sure noticed that everybody was good in the last two games. Very well-pitched games. Congratulations to Matthew Boyd and to Shota Imanaga. And, you know, Michael Fulmer, that's just the price of pay in poker. That's just what happens in Major League Baseball. When guys go down, guys come up, guys move in, and then they're unfortunately, someone's got to go. So it just felt like it was his turn, nothing personal to it.
That's baseball, as far as the Michael Fulmer part goes. And no, I did not realize until we brought this up that they had shut down the Cardinals from a bullpen standpoint in the first two games, because the Cardinals scored 8 runs in the two wins and then obviously scored no runs in the two losses. And nice job, bullpen.
Yeah, that was a nice response and needed to see that. I believe that Michael Fulmer, the way that Tommy Hotovy talked about him yesterday and the way that he talked to Zach in the pregame show this week, I wonder if this will end up with him accepting a demotion to Iowa. Maybe he is somebody that ends up staying in the organization for possibility later. A call-up, he's come back from a lot. And he did have one outing that was encouraging. Don't know what exactly they're thinking, but I would love to know. I would love to know if he will, you know, be in Iowa at AAA at some point in time, and if other if there's going to be other interest in him around the league, because he is a veteran coming off an injury. Maybe he doesn't have the stuff he used to, but he did sound like a guy committed to seeing where this takes him this year. It's crowded in that bullpen, and that's a good situation to have again. You know, the Cubs bullpen, except for the previous 7 days before the Cardinals series, had been really one of the best in the league over the previous month. So they need that. They need that consistency and effectiveness in Houston, and let's hope it continues.
That's a good question.
How will the White Sox fare against the Giants this weekend, and what's something you're looking forward to seeing at the rate? Who is the Sox closest thing to a gate attraction, or would that be a rate attraction?
I don't know who that would be. I think if I have to, top of my head, the way this has gone this month, I'm most curious to see how Grant Taylor pitches and when he pitches and if he pitches and what are the circumstances. If he's brought in to protect a lead, if he's brought in as an opener, what are they going to do with Grant Taylor? When a relief pitcher is your most compelling figure on your team right now because of what he offers in the future, that says that you don't have a lot to sell necessarily from a marketing standpoint. And the Sox really don't. I think they have something going on with a lot of the young players. I like Chase Mydroth because I think the way he plays can be infectious. I think he's a smart player. He certainly is a scrappy one, and he's all effort all the time. That's fun. It should be Luis Robert Jr., but it's not. He may not even play this weekend. Who knows how bad his hamstring is? Do we know the results of the MRI?
Not yet. Find out today.
Could be an IL stint. Who knows? Because if that, would that shock you at all if they announce one of their roster moves?
I would expect that.
Yeah, he's going to be placed on the IL. So he should be the rate attraction, but I don't know that he is. They've got a lot of young pitchers that probably qualify. If I had to pick one of the most, I think, enthusiastic, enjoyable players to watch, who's one of the young guys, give me Kyle Teal.
I was going to say, who's ever catching, that would be, I guess, the attraction. And I know that's not necessarily super glamorous, but that's what it is. I guess from a Chicago sports perspective, there are several people nowadays, and I don't think you're allowed to do this, but I don't want to tell other fans how to fan, is that I'm a fan of both teams. I don't know if you can really be a fan of both teams. But if you are, okay. I wonder if you're interested in seeing Rafael Devers, because the Cubs were supposedly interested and made a couple of phone calls about Devers. And Devers now is with the Giants from the Red Sox. And maybe that's somebody that Chicago sports fans would like to, look at in the old shoulda, coulda, woulda. But the Giants are a good team. I mean, maybe the Sox win one. Maybe.
Yeah, it'd be great if they could win a game, no question about it. I'd like to see Aaron Civale have a good game tonight, just to help any future possibility. Adrian Hauser pitches again. He's a fun guy to watch. And then you got Verlander on Sunday against TBD. So that'll be interesting.
Ooh, that could be Grant Taylor.
Yeah, that could be somebody. I don't think it's going to be Grant Taylor, but I just don't think he's an opener?
Yeah.
But I kind of like Savaye and Hauser going 1-2. They've been doing last time out. It was kind of fun to see. I don't know if it's going to work. I would say Chase Mydroth is the guy that'll have dirt all over his uniform. He's the scrappy guy. I think he's kind of a fun guy just to keep an eye on. But you're on it. I think Kyle Teal can get a couple of hits. The problem with the White Sox, they don't have power, but they have guys that can get a hit here and there, and it's fun to see if they can get anything done. But there's no all-star on that roster, and we've been kind of lamenting that, and it's something to keep in mind, because someone's going to get named that honor. It'll probably be a pitcher. just because I don't know that I was just for snorts and giggles looking through some of the Hall of Fame, some of the All-Star voting yesterday. And it's ridiculous. There's nobody on the roster that got a vote in the top 10 at any position, which is correct. I mean, I'm not saying anyone's getting short shrifted. They don't really have anybody that you would go out there necessarily to see, and they don't really have anyone. I suppose maybe you could say Benintendi could run into a homer, but they don't even have that going for him.
Verlander on Sunday. Wow.
Not good for the White Sox.
Not good for the White Sox, but it's good for the it's an attraction. That's intriguing. It could be his last appearance at the rate.
Here's hoping.
And with that, I'll take your questions.
Not so much this week. How much confidence did Bulls GM Mark Eversley inspire after doing all the media, the Bulls, following the drafting of Noah Essengay instead of, who you just heard there, AK, his boss? What stood out most about his communication in front of various audiences?
I thought Mark Eversley did very well. I thought he was, calm, cool, collected. I was amused by a couple of the moments we had with him. I enjoyed his answers. I don't think he changed the way I look at things. I think that, he talked about being in transition, and he didn't talk about shortening the timeline. So that was interesting, but it's the same idea, I suppose. Listen, we all know what's going on with the Bulls. We know the situation they're in. We know, and it was underscored yesterday, that they have all of their team under contract. They got, if you count re-signing Giddey and giving a contract to Noah Essengay, then they have 14 players under contract. They're trying to save a spot for one more for the mid-level exception, maybe grab somebody out of free agency. That's kind of a modest addition, but they're going to have to get rid of people if they want to do more contracts. So we kind of already know that, and it's one of the reasons that they went into the draft and traded down for cash. That's just a bad look. I know everyone does it. I know it's just a common practice, but when you saw during the day that the Lakers moved up 10 spots, taking the Bulls pick, which they then moved up again with, by the way, but that was for cash considerations. It just made them, first of all, the reaction on Twitter was just, and I get it, Twitter doesn't mean anything, but the reaction was just, let's make a bunch of jokes about how cheap they are. And I don't think they're cheap, but it's it opens up everybody to all sorts of ridicule when you're doing something just for cash. Now, they're doing it because they don't have room on the roster for anyone. Nonetheless, it was a bad public relations move.
So I appreciate Mark Eversley. I appreciate the Bulls. Mark was gracious to come on with you guys yesterday morning. A couple of things jumped off, and after rethinking the second one, we can get into that in a minute. But the first one, early on in the conversation, when you guys were talking about trying to get some expectations, and basically zero, like no expectations. We draft the guy, and we hand them off to the coach and his staff. And that was like, wait, what? Like, isn't there like, what about player development? Right. What about, okay, this is the guy's skill set. This is what we're doing at the NBA level. Is there a chance that this guy, like, are we looking to, is it 10 minutes a night? Is it 15 minutes a night? Is he starting? Is he going to go to the G League so he actually gets some? I just wanted a little bit more about what's next.
Specifics.
And it was just like, yeah, we drafted the guy. We handed off to the coach and the coaching staff. I was like, I wanted more. But sounds like a very smart guy. Sounds very confident in what he's doing. I could see him being in AK's role running an organization someday. I just, as a fan, I wanted more of what the plan was for this guy. It also caught all of us off guard, like that they had never met him in person. And maybe that, again, is just today's NBA.
It is today's NBA. They did interview him via Zoom, as I was reminded several times yesterday after my initial reaction was shock. I still can't get past that. And that's just the way that things operate these days. But this weekend, when they are in the same room with Noah Essengay, will be the first time the Bulls are in the same room with Noah Essengay. And this is somebody they have drafted to be a difference maker in the franchise. That's what I couldn't stop thinking about after Mark Eversley was on our show. And he was really solid. And he's very much in command. And he's a good front man for any organization. And maybe that was part of the thought process, is to give him that opportunity. But it was refreshing to focus on the substance of what somebody from the Bulls organization was saying rather than the style, because I think we got caught up, and people can get caught up in, you know, AK is just not strong at communicating publicly to a group as much as he is effective communicating privately to individuals. So that's one thing that stood out. The other thing is that Eversley talked pretty casually about bringing Vooch back, or that Vooch is going to be one of the players that is coming back. And I know that he has to say that, but the way that he said it was almost like an understanding or an assumption that we all should have made. Well, when you bring him back, you know, Vooch is coming back. I thought that was interesting.
I did too. And do you think that has anything to do? Did something change with all the Achilles injuries in the East? And, if you keep Vooch around, does that help your chances of...
Bingo.
Right?
Like, that's why it's so, not Dustin.
Right, maybe they thought they were going to trade him over the last 2 days, but then because of this, all of a sudden they saw a window where, hey, Vooch playing 25 minutes a night could help us get to the real playoffs.
Because when you remember what he said about the way they finished the season, 15-5, and their glorious 20-game run, and what they were able to do and how they were able to play in that stretch, I did wonder. Eastern Conference kind of up for grabs. Vooch comes back, you draft a young guy to develop, and all of a sudden the Bulls are convincing themselves, whether you agree with it or not, that they might be better than people think. And I don't know that I have to think about that a little bit longer, but it did come through. He was pretty matter of fact that Vooch right now is expected back.
Oh, that's a good question.
That's the voice of Eddie O. He'll be answering questions from Mullion Haw, 7:25. Who will the Blackhawks draft tonight with the 3rd overall pick? What should they be looking for? How big is this draft for the franchise? And what do you think of Connor Bedard telling The Athletic that he's confident that he'll sign a contract extension with the Hawks, even though it might not necessarily be next week or the week after that? The earliest he can sign is the 1st of July, so in about, 6 days?
Yes, 6 days. It could happen. Wow. No, we're closer than that. Look, this is a big day for the Blackhawks. This could be one of those nights where you look back, hopefully, where they get a couple guys who are contributing to a team that's on its way to the playoffs. And I don't know if they're that close, but drafts are exciting for teams that are rebuilding to the extent the Hawks are rebuilt. They've got to start winning. They've torn it down to such a degree, they've got to start winning. I would love for Michael Mesa to drop to them at 3rd. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Islanders are going to take him, or they're going to take Matthew Schaefer, number 1 overall. And then you see the Sharks at number 2. Probably Mesa is going to go. And then Anton Frandell, the Swedish center. Anton Frandell is the name to keep an eye on tonight for the Hawks.
Flugenschnurk.
Exactly.
Flugenschnurkenplug.
What he said. Anton, according to someone who was quoted about his game, he is a tank on ice. He has a shot like a missile.
He shoots very well.
He is a shot-making machine. So I think he is a guy that you could see. He's a bigger guy. He's young. He could spend another year in the Swedish Professional League, where he set all kinds of records for – he's only like 18, 19 years old. This is a young player who fits the profile. If you get Mesa, who had like 134 points last year in the OHL, you might see a guy who helps you immediately. I would love for that to happen. That's plan A for me, but I think it's remote. So plan B, Antoine Frandell, the Swedish tank.
Let him cook.
Let him cook.
I'm cheering for that now, just so we can get a little bit more Mully in the Swedish chef. But I am going to sidestep this question and hand it off to the guy dressed for success, the man in one of the best, if not the best, sweaters in all of sports, Brandon Fryer, our hockey guy here behind the glass.
All right, I'm starting to sweat, by the way. So anyway, I'm right with you, David. Antoine Frondell is the guy I want. I think another, if Misa doesn't fall, another name to look at, though, is James Hagan. I like him. Speed guy, yeah, playmaker.
Boston College.
I like him, but I think Frondell is the guy just because I think they want a little bit more size, good two-way player. He got elite shot release overall. He knows how to get in space. He's a big guy. I think they want to get a little bit more physical. This is huge for the Blackhawks right now. You have the number. You have a top three pick, okay? You need another star along with Connor Bedard, and you need to show Connor Bedard to me that, look, we're here to win. You don't want to have another disappointing season. I don't know what they're going to do in free agency. It don't look like much right now that's really exciting me. So I really think the focus is this draft, and that's the person I would look at is Frondell. But check out James Hagans. I really like him, too. He could be another name because they need scoring. They got enough on the defensive side.
I'm not one to question our resident hockey expert, but I did read that James Hagans has fallen because the Stanley Cup Finals underscored the needs for size, and he's 5'10". And he didn't have like an overwhelming season at Boston College. He just didn't put up numbers the way some of these guys have. So it'll be very curious to see how that impacts this draft. And I'm hoping that that the Sharks take Frondell. And I'm hoping for Michael Misa because he has been compared, given the production, 62 goals, 134 points.
Crazy numbers.
And the OHL, that has led to comparisons with guys like, are you waiting for it? Sidney Crosby.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Kane.
Bring it on.
A certain Connor McDavid, yes. If you remember that guy.
I know who he is.
So if you could get a guy like that, that's just kind of a point machine, and he is over 6 feet tall. It's mm-hmm. not like he's a tiny fellow. So that would be awesome if somehow that happened. But Frondell, as you say, is playing with grown men in the Swedish second league, and they say that his 25 points at his age, second only to William Nylander, believe it or not, in that league, which is that's pretty good company ahead of guys that David Pastrnak, he's ahead of him. I mean, that's pretty good. I don't think they can go wrong with the third pick in the draft. The only other guy I want to mention, and I think the rifle shot of Frondell is something we're going to really appreciate. The only other guy that stands out to me is Porter Martone. Is that mm-hmm. it, Martone? He is.
I think you're right with Martone. Yeah,
6'4".
He's a size guy.
I mean,
he's a guy that adds some size immediately.
And that's what they say, that maybe he's a little slower, but they seem to have speed everywhere, and it would be a different
good compliment.
Type of player.
Good exactly. mix and match. That's a good point. Also, one other name. There might be another Caleb in town by the end of tonight. Caleb Desnoyers. Caleb Desnoyers. I don't know that I'm saying that exactly.
I got a feeling that
the way it should be, but
that Noah Esenge could probably hang out with him.
Well, I think Caleb Desnoyers is a very hockey IQ is high. He's a guy that was going to be a top five pick, and he's somebody that the Blackhawks have been linked to. He's got a body that you could build on. He's 6'1", about 185, I think he's listed at. Needs to add some strength, but he does give you a little bit bigger than what you said in Hagans, and somebody to watch tonight. The draft will be exciting for the Blackhawks, so I think that they'll end up with a guy. If it's Misa, he could be immediately impactful. If it's another guy, he could be on the way eventually.
All right, we've got the extra point next. We'll get right to it. It's Mully and Haw on the score. Flugenschnurk.
Exactly. What he said.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
How will the Cubs do in Houston this weekend? Will Kyle Tucker make his old team regret trading him? Which starter will have the best outing? Kate Horton, that's tonight. Colin Ray on Saturday. Or Jameson Taillon on Sunday. Will the Sox get a game off of the Giants? So a little Cubs and Sox combo here.
Start with the Cubs. I think Jameson Taillon on Sunday against Framber Valdez is the most intriguing matchup because you got two veterans that will be going against each other. And Jameson Taillon needs a strong outing after last time. And he tends to recover well and rebound. So I think that will be something the Cubs can actually look forward to. And I think they may get one tonight. I like Cade Horton on the mound. You know that. And that's a huge surprise there. But if he can give them a Shota-like effort and five strong, five and dive, that's good. That's fine with me. I don't have a ton of confidence in Colin Ray on Saturday. It doesn't always come down to the starting pitcher, but it certainly is a good indicator. So I think that the Cubs can actually win two out of three. They are playing the last two games the way that you expect them to play. This is a very good team. It's one of the best teams in the National League and one of the best teams in the Major League. So they should show the Houston Astros, who also qualify as a divisional playoff type of team, this is a good matchup down in Houston. I think the Cubs can win two out of three. Wouldn't be shocked at all if we're talking about that on Monday morning. As for the Sox and the Giants, tougher sledding. You mentioned Verlander. He's 0-5. How did that happen? He pitches Sunday. Robbie Ray pitches tomorrow.
He's 57 years old.
I know, that's probably a big part of it. Yeah. He gets that's why he's pitching on Sunday. So I think the Sox will win 1-3.
I don't have a whole lot of faith, unfortunately, in the Cubs this weekend. It's a tough place to play. The Astros are very good at home. Framber Valdez is very good. I would love to see Jameson Taillon bounce back. I'm really curious. Tommy Hotovy told you guys in the audience yesterday that they have been working on it. They noticed something. They are working on something to avoid the long ball that has plagued Jameson Taillon. I think the Cubs win the game tonight. If they don't win the game tonight, I expect you guys will be talking about the Cubs getting swept down in H-Town. And then I do think the White Sox will win at least one. I don't expect them to get swept.
You think the
he thinks the Cubs don't,
if they
win,
don't
tonight,
win tonight, they're getting swept.
They're going to get swept.
That's unfortunate.
So tonight is
tonight's the
only chance?
Well, that actually, that's in keeping with the way that both of you, frankly, have talked about the Cubs. You both like Cade Horton, and everyone has turned on Colin Ray. Well, he's kind of turned on you. But Jameson Taillon, I was surprised at how much kind of abuse he got for his outing, just because, as you said earlier, David, he does bounce back pretty well. Mm-hmm. So I think they can win this series. I'll go with 1-3. So we've got all of us with different predictions from the series. So that'll be fun. I hope you're right, David. I don't think anyone's going to pick them to win all three, but I hope they win two of the three, because that would be great if they went 4-3 for the seven-game trip.
And right? I would love for Kyle Tucker to like go deep twice.
Oh, yeah.
And then show some emotion rounding the bases. That would be great to do something that shows. He's very even keeled.
Who gets the video tribute tonight, or do they do two? Does Tucker and Presley get it tonight? Do they split that up? Whose is played first?
Are they going to do that?
They might do it for Tucker. I don't know that they're doing it for Presley.
Presley was there a long time.
Then maybe they do it for Presley just to tell Tucker, and then Tucker would go off on him. So I think they got to be careful.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. If they're going to prioritize one over the other, I don't think they would do that.
Would it also be interesting to do like a little prop bet or keep an eye on it, like total bases, Paredes versus Tucker?
That's a good one.
Oh, that's a good
one. Because Paredes has been pretty solid for them.
I'll take Tucker.
It's something to keep an eye on anyway, right?
How about Cam Smith?
I hope he doesn't hit a home run.
Here's a good one.
I'll take Paredes.
Cam Smith versus Matt Shaw.
Right, there you go.
Kyle Tucker versus Paredes. And the Cubs probably should win both of those. Matt Shaw needs to start hitting. What is the answer to the question that you don't want to ask, which is, what happens if Matt Shaw continues down this road offensively? What do you do in July? Is he
trade for a third baseman?
Well, that may be the reality. Is he meeting Ben Brown in Iowa for drinks or coffee? or brunch.
Wow.
Does he stick around as a defensive replacement?
I don't think you can keep him around as a defensive replacement.
I'd rather have him than Bruhan.
But if he needs at bats, Dustin.
He needs at bats.
But I think he's on the playoff roster, if that helps.
Later on.
I hope he rediscovers whatever's been lacking the last couple of weeks. But I don't want to just be here because I like him, ignore the fact that he's not been good offensively.
Send him to Arizona so we can get on that Colson.
That's a Sox thing, not a Cub thing. And that, you only do that with players who are in the minors, not somebody who's contributing to a division winner. So Matt Shaw, just get going. And I think this is a good weekend to spur him. Matt Shaw versus Cam Smith, who has a better weekend. Kyle Tucker versus Paredes. I think that's an easier one.
Yeah, I think Kyle Tucker is going to get the best of that. I think Kyle Tucker, you know, quiet guy, deadly. I think he's waiting for this one. Let's hope so. Anyway, he had this circled on his calendar. That's the dream. Mully and Haw, 312-644-6767 at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 the score.
Valencia working relatively quickly. He is ready again for the 2-2. And here it comes. Strike three called. Cubs win the ballgame. Daniel Palencia strikes out the side. And now Wilson Contreras being restrained by some of his teammates.
I don't know what Wilson, you know, there are times where he just does these things and you don't know, have any understanding why. And we saw it in Chicago, and, you know, it's not like the Cubs are going to try to hit him and bring the tying run to the plate. That's for sure.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Pat and Ron on it as always. And it was the end of the game yesterday where the frustration of one Wilson Contreras, the frustration of the Cardinals being shut out for, 22 consecutive innings, finally got to him, and he didn't like the way it ended. He later apologized.
He did apologize.
Yeah.
But he needed to because he was over the top with the emotion. But that is Wilson Contreras. It's nothing new. And you could hear the disgust in Ron Coomer's voice. And I think it's fun to listen to that and remember that Wilson Contreras, there were times as a Cub where he would test your patience as well. It's good for the rivalry. The Cubs will see the Cardinals again next week at Wrigley Field, and this will make it a little bit more interesting and spicy. Danny Palencia, what gets lost maybe a little bit is that he gets his eighth save. It was a little bit more difficult and tricky than it needed to be. But he struck out the side.
Yes.
And he got it. He got a save, and he did the job.
Yep, he did. And he did well, and he said nice things about Willie, too, in the postgame. Said that that's not the guy that he would ever throw at, that he knows him. He's watched him since he was a kid. They're fellow countrymen, and he would never purposely hit.
Both from Wilson Venezuela.
Yeah.
And both have... They're both fiery guys. They're both competitors. And the celebration from Palencia is what I think set Contreras off. And Dustin thinks it might have been a little bit excessive. I don't agree.
I don't either.
I think you've got to allow for that in situations that present themselves. So if Contreras felt a little bit miffed by seeing that display, look in the mirror, because he does the same thing.
You get two guys on and you get out of it, and you get out of it by striking out the side, and he was throwing pretty fast. He was really that is, you got reason to feel good about yourself and to pound your chest and have a moment.
And
right?
I also, yes, absolutely. And I also think Wilson Contreras was frustrated not only by the fact the Cardinals hadn't scored in 22 innings, but the fact that he was duped and played, and PCA did PCA does, and the Cubs pulled off a double steal, and Wilson Contreras was the first baseman who looked like a guy playing first base
for the first time. Yeah.
And to go back to that play, they get Swanson in a rundown, and PCA takes off, and they score a much-needed insurance run.
And he didn't react well to it.
Looked lost.
No, he did. He looked foolish on that play, quite frankly, and I'm sure that's what really kind of frosted him to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Very competitive guy.
Cubs get out of there with a split that felt like it was a series victory just because of the way that they won the last 2 days. It's Matthew Boyd and Shota Imanaga, outstanding lefties for the Cubs. 1-2 right now. They're 1-2.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. We'll be right back with your calls on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.